With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you decide what you should watch next. It's simple. Scroll through our episode, see which title you've heard people bang on about, or pick one at random, and trust us to have a selection of people who you can hear the opinions of without spoilers. Let us be the people to test those friends nagging you to watch something. We will be the test, we'll be the guinea pigs, and tonight we are dealing with The Defenders. So this is Howell and Jamie, now 10 seasons into the box set pod, 10 seasons, so hopefully a good box of box sets so far that you can pick from, and maybe some amusing friendly chatter in between. Tonight we are joined by Matthew Wandless from London, the other regular now on this podcast. He's trying to install a printer this evening, which is a stupid thing to do. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Yeah, I tend to agree with you about the printer. This is a bad idea.
For those of you who listen to us every week, sorry for the momentary break in service. That was because I had to go to Los Angeles and have some fun, followed by my internet not working, so we had a little gap. But anyway, I'm sure you don't listen to it in order. Why would you? Speaking of being completely out of order, the other person joining us is Adam Comstiv.
Hi, smooth intro.
Thank you. We were at one point going to have two Marvel learned scholars on the podcast with us, Tiernan and Sam, but due to me having to reschedule the podcast, we now have neither. However, Sam has sent me a large email in defence stall the virtue.
Defence?
Well, you know, I think he's just said why he likes it, okay? So I'm jumping the gun perhaps there. And I'll read Sam's email out perhaps later rather than earlier on. So I watched episode one. Jamie, how much have you watched?
One.
Matthew?
All.
And Adam?
I've accidentally watched 6 episodes.
Okay. Adam's stumbling around in the middle there. Matt is obviously a fan. Are you a fan, Matt? But you've watched it all.
I did watch it all, but that's mainly out of morbid curiosity than out of any real joy that I gained from it.
Only you would watch something out of morbid curiosity. Well, all the way through.
Have you ever experienced any real joy?
Absolutely, yeah. No, it was largely to do with the break we had from the podcast, actually, because I think if we hadn't had such a long time off, I would have only watched one and then come onto it as a newbie. But, I really like the Marvel Universe, and that's the large part of me watching it, is just like wanting to be up to date with it all. But I can't lie, I'm tremendously disappointed by it.
Okay. Jamie, I tell you what, let's just do a little setup of this show. This is part of the Marvel Universe, and it's kind of coming, as far as I can work out, because I'm not an expert, it's the coming together of lots of different Marvel characters. So the start of this one, there's a sword fight somewhere far away from America in a sewer. My thoughts were, whose side am I on? Who are the defenders? The lead guy looks like Chris Pratt in the dark. Is this set in the East? No, a guy's just told them that their fight is in New York. And then, hang on, there's January Jones, Jessica, what's it? What's she called? Jessica Jones.
Kristen Ritter, are you looking for the name of the actress?
That's right, and the blind one from Daredevil, which I've watched a lot of, and he's in his lawsuit rather than his Power Ranger suit. So we're in the middle of the Marvel Universe. That's the setup. They're all going to have to come together. Sigourney Weaver is the bad person, and that's about as much as me, the stupid me, can figure out. Quite impressed in general, as usual, with Marvel stuff, but also now quite cold by Marvel. Jamie, Do you feel compelled already to move on, or have we got as Sam in his email got a job to persuade us to continue?
Sam's got a massive job. I disliked it immensely, and I think, well, not immensely, that's harsh. I mean, I went too far there. I disliked it, but I also have, what the hell is
who
going
is,
on? Somebody
who's moving furniture?
Are you with your printer, ship. Matt?
I walked down some stairs. Sorry.
Goodness me.
He's going in the basement.
He's in the dungeon again.
Matt's doing a radio acting workshop for us now, where he's not really got any stairs. He lives in a bungalow.
I'm sorry, I've stopped moving. There we go.
And you sound miles away as well. So anyway, Jamie didn't like it. Adam.
Well, quickly, I just want to say that I've got superhero fatigue, so I feel very much a bit sick of the whole superhero world, especially Marvel. I'm very sick of Marvel. Out of this, I've watched Daredevil, but I gave up after halfway through season two. I liked Jessica Jones. I didn't enjoy Luke Cage that much, and I've not even bothered with Iron Fist. So I'm not going into this in the right mindset. Having said that, it was still bad. Over to you, Adam.
You've watched six episodes.
There's six episodes of eight, yeah. And I kind of agree. It's only by some sort of inertia that I got past number one. But, I enjoyed Luke Cage. I know what you mean about superhero fatigue. I thought Luke Cage had something kind of interesting in it. It was novel. I enjoyed that that world that was created. It was quite stylish. I enjoyed Jessica Jones. I quite liked it. I had no interest in Daredevil or Iron Fist because of that superhero fatigue. So I find myself watching this for the first episode or two, literally caring about half of the time. Because I'm quite interested in what's going on. Like, I'm interested enough to pick up the Jessica Jones story or the Luke Cage story, and I don't really care about the other guys. So it literally has my interest 50% of the time, and I imagine that's probably a thing for anyone who's not watched the precursors. You probably can watch it without having watched them all, but it does affect your enjoyment.
We've said this before about Marvel stuff, that I think if you're a real Marvel Universe fan, then maybe you love it, but you're bringing a lot of love to it. When I was in Los Angeles on the day we left, we went to Santa Monica Pier, and on the beach there was the Black Pearl from Pirates of the Caribbean, and next to our car was a policeman waving us around saying they're setting up to film the Pirates of the Caribbean tomorrow. We were like, whoa. And as far as I was surprised they were still filming them. I was surprised they were filming it this early. And it reminded me of this argument about Marvel as well, which is, once you've got the money and the ability and the special effects to make anything possible, there has to be, suddenly the bar is set so high, and we can get fatigued in this golden age of what's possible in the CGI world. I went to watch Kingsman the other night, and the fight scenes are phenomenal. Of course, they're phenomenal, but also you've seen it. You know that everything's possible, so what's the point? And I feel that way about Marvel, where I go, okay, if I'd spent my life reading these comics and I was seeing this come to life, I'd be so excited by this. So perhaps it's just not for us. But at the same time, I'm sure that what Netflix want and what Marvel want is to be able to bring new sheep to the fold. And that's not working on us. It's not grabbing us. And perhaps, just like with Pirates of the Caribbean, things have become so complicated that I found myself watching The Defenders episode one going, I know you're explaining this really well for me. I know that what you're doing is really, really clever, but it's just too much. I can't follow it.
It's too much. It's too much of everything. There's too much TV superheroes. There's too many film superheroes. On TV alone, you've got Supergirl, Gotham, Legion, Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow, The Shield, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones, Agent Carter. There's too many now. I don't care anymore. I don't even know who I like out of these. I kind of want some of them to die, because then at least it'll be interesting.
Especially because culturally, the interesting point for us was when it came to that. It was a question about vigilantism, wasn't it? Like, what's the difference between Batman, who's a terrorist, who is taking the law into his own hand and killing people, and Batman, the Christ-like moral saviour who is fighting corruption. And when they started to explore those things, which they certainly do in all of this stuff that we're talking about, once you've explored that, there's kind of nowhere else to explore with it. It's just stories. It's just telling the same stories, or it feels that way.
It comes back a little bit to the point that we've made about a few series about not knowing when to stop. You know, in any story, like the it was Big Little Lies we talked about, wasn't it? Where how you were really annoyed by the very final shot. Yeah, the sort of the addition, the unnecessary addition to a cliffhanger. With this, in the Marvel series that I have enjoyed, it's felt like at the end of them, it's tagged on a little bit of a, and these guys are going to cross and these worlds are going to meet, and it's trying to pull you in to invest in each of those stories. And then you think, this Defenders thing is going to be somehow all these, the sum of all these parts, and it's going to be something extra, and it's not. It is somehow less than the sum of its parts. It is diluting four strong storylines to try and get them to fit together. And it's not like the budget's gone up or the talent has gone up or anything like that. It's if you're a total Marvel completist, I can probably see that it's probably interesting in getting these characters together, but there's definitely a point of fatigue.
It makes where me feel just, stupid. Yeah. It makes me feel like I'm joining a book at book five. You know, a series of books.
Well, I don't know about this because as a comic book fan, I think they're doing a disservice to both fans and non-fans. Because when they announced that they were going to do Civil War in the Avengers series, that was really exciting for a number of reasons. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Civil War series that they did, but also because that is a storyline that goes out of the normal stream of comic book thinking and takes it into a political place and kind of finds its way into a very real set of circumstances where you know, the stuff that wouldn't normally get involved in a superhero story is involved, like, you know, governmental oversight and politics, and also it takes in the entire swathe of the Marvel universe, so you have all kinds of different people put against each other. And what I really hoped when they started that was that was going to filter out into the TV series and would become this whole kind of media crossing world spanning event, and the whole idea of Marvel as this kind of all-encompassing media giant just hasn't panned out for me, because they tend to do the same thing over and over again, which is kind of get a team of people together, place a common enemy in front of them, make them sort of not like each other at first, but then realize that they have to work together and then eventually conquer their shit and get through it. And I don't know how many times I can watch that.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that Marvel logo came up at the beginning of the films when they first started coming out, and you went, you knew you were in for something special. This was...
Yeah, my pants got wet.
Something fun, at least.
They were doing something so new.
Definitely. There was a time where, you're absolutely right, you had that feeling. I remember watching the first Avengers film, and I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And then I watched the second one, I just stopped caring. And I think that was the point where I stopped caring. There was a point where Thor's like having an electric bath or something weird. And I was like, what the hell is going on now? I don't even understand this anymore. And that was where I switched off for everything superhero related. Because I've not been able to come back.
And yeah, I'm not switched off to superhero stuff. I still continue watching it and I still continue enjoying it, some of it. But the difference between what we have at the movie level, where we have these really very good actors doing their stuff, and a bit more scope in terms of what's available. I thought Civil War was a good movie, actually. It did too much in too soon, in too short a time. And what I'm worried about is that they won't refer back to it at all.
Yeah.
Like the idea that everything's kind of hunky-dory by the end of that film and actually they're still pals kind of thing. Like, the rift between Captain America and Iron Man is so seismic in the comics, the way they did it. It's really amazing. Like, it's worth reading for anyone. And this was the first kind of crossover thing that they'd really done where it was like everyone's got their own shit. And I know we had a Captain America film, an Iron Man film, and a Thor film, but this one feels like, you know, there's a whole 10-hour thing devoted to this crossover. And not 8 hours, whatever, how many episodes there were. And really, like, I think they just squandered it completely. This should have been the very biggest of the TV series. It should have been rivaling the spectacle that we see on the films. And I don't know, maybe, you know, I'm not a network executive. I don't know if this show is capable of making the kind of money that a movie does, but I just feel like they should have gone for it, and it could have really had an impact on the genre, and just could have pushed it forward, and I think grown an audience where there maybe wasn't one before. I don't know.
This was a Leviathan.
I agree entirely. Yeah.
The possibilities were like, you know, when Disney started making his films, every step of the way, they wanted to do something new. He knew that they had to do something new and revolutionary with animation or film in order to remain the biggest fish in the pond. So it would always develop to, doing the first feature-length animation or mixing film and animation or whatever. Marvel had that ability when they came along to go, they made such an impact that they could be reinventing the genre or how they tell the stories. And they're not. They've stopped at this super... It feels like the jug is full to the brim and that jug is staying the same. And then something like, you know, and I know we've discussed DC, Matt, and you probably disagree with me on this. DC is pretty clunky, and Batman, Superman and stuff, but with Wonder Woman, the reason I really liked the Wonder Woman film is because it was a simple war film that went, this person has to get from point A to point B and some stuff will happen in the middle. It feels with Marvel that I have to swallow or catch up on or understand, intellectualize 15 different backstories that go back 30 years in order to start to appreciate it or enjoy it.
And but that should make it stronger. That should be its strength. The history of the franchise should be its strength. And I tell you that there are two things which tell you exactly where this has gone wrong. One of them is a smaller thing, and that is that Daredevil is always on the ground. Like, Daredevil's whole thing, like, he's supposed to be almost, like, as agile and nimble around the city as Spider-Man is. You know, he swings around with this rope on his cane and stuff, and they've got none of that. Like, even the shit-ass Ben Affleck film that they had had loads of that in it, and that was absolutely dreadful. Mm. But it still had that aspect to it. This has none of that. So it's just that's a... shows the level of ambition that they have for this. And the second thing is that they've chosen the Hand as the antagonist, and it's them falling into this trap of having an endless stream of enemies who are entirely without a face, name, or any stakes. The series has prospered at its most when they've had personalized antagonists. Like, the first series of Daredevil was really good with the Kingpin. That whole building up of that hatred between the two of them. And I don't know what they've done with what's his name? Is it Vincent D'Onofrio? I can't remember the name of the actor. But because he was brilliant. He was much much better than Charlie. What's his name?
Yeah, and the same can be said for Jessica Jones. I thought David Tennant.
Exactly, yeah.
David Tennant, I really missed David Tennant. It made me realise, that actually...
That's what I mean. Those two series really had something. And also they have this tendency to just to feel the need to kill people off when it's like they got rid of Ben Urich, the journalist, in the first series of Daredevil. And he's supposed to be a big kind of pivotal character in a lot of Marvel stuff. Like, he's a really interesting guy because he's a journalist who knows who some of the superheroes are and things like that. So he's got a really interesting part to play. And they've just got rid of him. They've just cast him aside. And it seems like they've done the same thing with the Kingpin. And it's just like they feel like they need to just throw in a death. And it's been like I'm saying it as well. He was the most interesting thing in this series.
It feels like they've
massive spoilers. Oh my god!
Uh-oh. After editing that out, I'll get a question. Have they bottled it? It's like I was saying, you know, it's somehow less than some of it parts. It felt like it was going to build up to something spectacular, and they've just not dialed anything up. So have they seen how it was going and decided this was the wrong way for them to go, but they just had to contractually fulfil 8 hours worth of screen time, just fitting with a few fights, and that's it?
I have a great fear, which is this. Disney bought Marvel, yeah?
Oh, by the way, I meant to point out for any listeners who are playing box set bingo, Howell making it about Disney. That ticked off about 10 minutes ago. Yeah.
So Disney bought Marvel, right? Disney also recently fired Steve Whitmire, whose autograph is on my wall, Kermit the Frog. There's only two people who've ever played Kermit the Frog, Jim Henson and Steve Whitmire, and they got rid of Steve. Star Wars, I think, as if you look at the Star Wars franchise, which they've also bought, has a great deal of, it feels to me like, for example, with Rogue One, they had the chance of doing something properly rogue, and really they just made another Star Wars film. I wonder with these, with the big conglomerates, there is an element of risk aversion, which is stopping them being the inventive thing that originally they were buying into.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, with the Han Solo film, they've fired the two guys who were taking that on and brought Ron Howard in.
There you go.
And then with the new Star Wars, the next Star Wars, the final episode, they got rid of Colin Trevorrow, who was directing it, and they brought back in J.J. Abrams. So I think there is definitely...
It's really scary the reason, the thing that saved Disney was buying Pixar, because they were doing the original stuff. And Pixar managed to stay on top, but it almost feels like there's this corner they're turning where it's heading towards safe choices instead of risk-taking. And if what Matt says is true, that... It's not that you have to be a comic book fan, it's that they have to take the risks that the comic books take and be as bold as the comic books, then that would certainly make sense and makes me want to sell my shares in Disney.
The comparison between sort of film and TV is interesting as well, because it feels like all the sort of big film, superhero films, certainly that I've seen recently, like some of that DC stuff as well, has been really about the dark side of superheroes, and they've been really dull. And somehow for this one, they've not had the courage to make this a really fun series. It just feels like watching S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that. I think the only reason that I've managed to watch a few is because we've not been particularly engaged with it, but it's just on Netflix, so it's very easy just to watch the next one. There's no way, if this was like a S.H.I.E.L.D. where I'd seen it on TV, I'd bother tuning in the next week.
Well, it's like, you know, the first episode of Defenders, you're kind of thinking, oh, when are they going to get together? And then you realise they're not going to get together in the first episode. And then you realise, I actually don't care about these people, these cows interacting together. I don't actually care. I don't even care what it's going to be like. And like you said before, Matt, it's more about the bad guys, because they've made them so dull and so vanilla, these protagonists, that you just don't really even give a shit about them interacting with each other.
So they seem to have pulled the bad guys out of the Iron Fist thing, though. Is that entirely? I didn't watch Iron Fist, but it just
Daredevil
feels like
Daredevil's with the hand.
Yes, of course. Yeah, he crossed. Yeah.
Is anybody ready now then to hear Sam's compendious academic and positive take?
I would be genuinely interested.
Can I make one more point about something that really annoyed me that I noticed in episode one particularly? I really enjoyed Luke Cage. It's probably my favourite one of my favourite sort of superhero type knockabout series. And when we talked about it on the pod, I remember, I think it was Tiernan, who was really enthusiastic about the use of music in it all the way through. He talked about the use of Wu-Tang in the fight scene and stuff like that. And I thought the use of music to create that world was really, it was fun. Whereas in this, it just feels really reductive to have every time a main black character comes on to have a funk soundtrack accompanying his every movement.
Right.
When it's really in contrast to everything else. It just felt like it was indicative of the fact that they weren't doing an overall show. They were just doing four separate mini storylines from different characters that weren't working stylistically together particularly at all.
Yeah, fair enough. Despite that, he was the one I most wanted to wander off into his world of all of them. I was like, well, man, watch this.
Yeah, he's probably the best performance and the most interesting character, definitely.
So we've pretty much poured a bucket of shit on the Defenders. Let's give Sam a chance, as John Lennon once sang. Here we go. This is my take on The Defenders. Firstly, I will freely admit that I'm something of a Marvel apologist. Good start, Sam. Certainly when it comes to almost all of the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe, in brackets, TV shows, I very much enjoyed both seasons of Daredevil, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. The less said about Iron Fist, the better. The thing is, if, like me, you're already on board with the MCU, then you'll watch The Defenders. I should be trying to persuade people who aren't. So here are my top three reasons. Number three, oh, I like it. He's doing it in chart form.
I love that.
Good.
You really don't need... At number three, you really don't need to have watched the individual series. Again, I leave Iron Sister one side because his story is terrible, but each of the other characters is developing in a new story arc from this first episode. Charlie Cox, i.e. Matt Murdock from Daredevil, is evidently struggling to deal with life on his own, separate from both his superhero identity and from his former business partner, Kristen Ritter. Jessica Jones doesn't know how to deal with... Sorry, business partner. Kristen Ritter, Jessica Jones, doesn't know how to deal with her categorization as an, inverted commas, hero. Mike Coulter, Luke Cage, is coming to terms with life outside jail. Each of these stories is a genuinely gripping exploration of having to adjust to a change of some sort. And this is only the first episode. He's so excited, and I feel so bad for everything we've said. At number two, the way it's filmed... In fact, let's just a quick moment on number three there. The way he writes it, just... I agree with that. I did watch episode one, and I did go, okay, yes, these are interesting premises. The three of them, I can see that they're interesting premises, but I almost, Sam, just felt like I was eating too much of a buffet. That was it. The old acid reflux kicking in, just thinking about the last time I ate too much of a buffet.
And Iron Fist is one of those shrimp-based ones that's been left under a light.
Yeah.
And you know you shouldn't touch it, but it's going to give you the squits.
You're going to go for it anyway.
But you have it anyway, and you immediately regret tasting that.
Number two, the way it's filmed is beautiful. Each of the protagonists has her own colour palette, and the scenes involving those characters are themed accordingly. In later episodes, you'll see the different colour schemes meet, combine and develop, along with their associated characters. That's fascinating. Equally, the cameras perform particular moves in the transitions between scenes. When you move between the different characters, even though in this first episode at least their paths never cross, you get the sense that something is drawing them together, that their cause is being unified in some way, simply through the way in which the characters are portrayed. That is called the mise en scène. And another very interesting point. Those are my words, by the way, mise-en-scene.
Is that you trying to use mise-en-scene?
Yeah, I've just added that. Mm. Again, yeah, I love all this. You know, if I could just have Sam pausing it every 5 seconds, explaining the brilliant effort that's gone into these things. But that's the problem. I feel like, you know, when you see those birds on a David Attenborough show that, like, spend a week preparing to impress a ladybird, and suddenly the ladybird turns up, he doesn't really give a shit, puffs out all his feathers and starts dancing for half an hour, going nuts. That's what I feel like with Marvin. I just feel like that ladybird. I go, could I have it, or shall I? I'll probably just go for a drink in the pond. At number one, finally, this is the best portrayal of a villain I have seen in ages. It's not just
crying out loud.
It's not just that Sigourney Weaver... Sorry, Sam. It's not just that Sigourney Weaver is brilliant, though she is. It's that the audience is made to really sympathise with someone who is at a terrible stage in life. The scenes with the Doctor were horribly moving before we realise or remember, if we've seen the trailer, that she's actually quite a terrible person. I found this paragraph...
Actually, you know what? He's right about that. Sigourney Weaver is the best thing in this series.
I found the Doctor scene moving in the sense of, like, oh, I wouldn't like to be in that situation. But at the same time, I found myself going, why do I care about this person again? I don't, because she's just been introduced to me, if I'm new to it. And so my empathy goes a certain distance. But as well, I just think, I don't really want to be in this Doctor's office. Maybe I should be instead in the Gilmore Girls land. I found this paradox of morality an interesting one. It is why Breaking Bad was so popular, perhaps. The combination of illness and depravity is an intriguing one. I do agree with that. I did find that intriguing when she's then sat in the park feeding the pigeons and stuff. But that's one of the two things I really remember about watching the first episode. Crikey, that's who's got a 1992 Nokia
That was mine. Maybe that's why my Skype sounded bad earlier. Mm. Yeah, apologies.
Maybe. So, so listen, that's all. Sam has Sam moved you, Jamie, towards
the only thing Sam's made me realise is I'm really glad he's not here today, because this could have got brutal. he's got such a lovely passion for it that I would hate the idea that we might have destroyed it a bit.
Well, not just
if he'd been here.
Imagine, you know, this podcast is never going to be a huge podcast, and I'll tell you for why. Because we pick subjects. If you love them, we're on them for a week. If we love them, it lasts for a week. If we hate them, you'll hate us forever. If you've clicked on this podcast because you love the Defenders, you're probably never going to trust our advice on anything again.
I'd love to hear what you loved about it, although not in as much detail as Sam gave. Sorry, Sam.
I would say it's not. I mean, it's, for all we've been kicking it, it's not a terrible show. But hearing Sam's points make me wish he was right. You know, from the point of view that if you're not an MCU person, however much he says he's trying to be dispassionate and put that aside, those storylines aren't that compelling early on. Mm. You know, it's not that great looking. It looks like four different shows that aren't really cooperating, and it doesn't get that much better, I don't think.
Sigourney
Weaver
is good.
Guys,
I've got to go. My kid's awake. I'll see you later.
Oh, Matt's got to go. Goodbye, right, Matt. Sure. Good luck. Child awake.
Sigourney Weaver's performance is good. She's great, but I don't really feel the stakes, and I won't spoil it, but the point he's referring to then seems to be forgotten altogether because of other characteristics she has. Mm. You know, I don't think she's as magnetic a villain or the group of villains she associates with are not nearly as interesting as David Tennant was in Jessica Jones or Mahershala Ali, is it, in Luke Cage?
Mm.
Can never quite pronounce his thing. But again, that's a really great magnetic performance about a bad guy doing good stuff, or is he a good guy doing terrible stuff? And he's a real tangible sort of threat to the hero of the show and the kind of the neighborhood that they inhabit. And this just feels like superhero supervillain by number stuff, like, you know, anonymous, and there's just not enough there for someone as good as Sigourney Weaver to get a teeth into, really, I don't think. So yeah, I wish Sam was right. But I think that's probably the difference between someone who's really into the Marvel Universe and someone who sort of drops in and out like I do.
Look, this podcast is... when I was in Los Angeles, I went on the Warner Brothers studio tour, and you'll have been...
Not all Disney, yeah?
You would love it.
You mixed it up.
I was on all the sound stages, you know, going amongst the studios there where things like Casablanca were filmed. I was on the Ellen set. That was exciting enough. The town square where the Gilmore Girls is filmed is used in lots and lots of things, including Friends and West Wing and all sorts. But it's used a lot in Gilmore Girls, and it is like a traditional town square, and it's just there. And we walked around that town square, and I was so bloody excited, and I still cannot persuade Sarah to sit and watch more than half an hour of it. And I'd still go back to this podcast is built on the idea that on episode one we all think we know what's going on, and we're slamming this series based on other Marvel stuff. But you know, Matt watched the whole series, Adam's watched six, Sam's watched the whole thing, and I do think that it's such an echo chamber of Marvel fans now that it's so difficult to cling on to. Same with Pirates of the Caribbean. There's just so many plots in these things now that nobody, but Shakespeare, wouldn't have written a plot that was that complicated.
Is it a question that people have stopped trying to make genuinely crossover stuff for wide audiences? You know, there's a certain audience when they lap up whatever with a certain badge on it, so they stop. They just, you know, we go down the route of fan service or self indulgence, because you don't need, because with the way that people consume stuff nowadays, you're going to have a set audience for something.
But also, why not? You know, maybe it is just for Marvel fans, and it'll find a huge audience. Nothing wrong with that. Make some stuff that's for new audiences. Make some stuff that's for them. The Walking Dead. I've just started rewatching that with Sarah. And the first couple of series, you know, the plots are so simple, it's great. And the later series at the moment, there's so much backstory, there's so much flashback, there's so much diversionary stuff. that you just think complexity has become this weird rabbit hole that they've wandered down, and we need to press the reset button, perhaps. Which
I blame Christopher Nolan for all of this.
Yeah,
I was rewatching. I was watching it. I loved the Batmans, I was rewatching The Dark Knight, and it's not as good as it felt at the time.
So you realise that what it. Me and Jonathan Ross said for years was correct.
You might have been close to the truth than I realised. That's all I'm saying.
Twaddle.
And I do feel like what Christopher Nolan did, he gave these characters a reality, gave them a basing in the real world, but he also has kind of opened the door to this, how would real superheroes live in? And now we get that all the time now, and now it feels very dull.
Yeah, give me George Clooney in a cat suit. Let's go back to that now. Let me ask you this.
Sometimes cinema's great, though, isn't it, when you have that hot take on it? That's kind of what's unique about cinema. You can kill it by analysing it and going back to it and really sort of, taking it apart. It's what you enjoy in those 2 hours in the cinema room, isn't it?
And as with all good punk and rock and roll, you destruct the thing that came before and you reconstruct it, which brings me on to this question. Have you both seen American Vandal?
I have indeed, and we should do it next week.
Next week is American Vandal, and I guarantee
I'm so up for that.
It is going to be a very different box set. Watch it, watch episode one and join us next week if you like, or don't watch it and just join us next week, but it's going to be great. Thank you both. It does feel bad to pour scorn on stuff like that, but it's can you imagine being the director of photography for The Defenders, coming up with all those different lighting schemes and everything? Yeah. Like the level of work that goes into that stuff, and then
they're in us. What do I know?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Yeah. Anyway, there we go.